source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Graylian. We're only a couple of weeks into the season, and this doesn't look like last year's NHL. From Dallas to Columbus, eyesores to eyeballs, James O'Brien and I are talking about just about everybody in the league. Welcome to the rink. And it's good to be back on the rink and talking to James O'Brien from NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and writing for Roto-World. You're starting a new column there, right?
That's correct. And you can actually find a link to the archives on my Twitter account, which is Cycle-Like Sedins.
Cycle-Like Sedins. Awesome. And, of course, you know, formerly the Cycle-Like Sedins blog, which I loved. Mm-hmm. So, great to be talking to you, especially after all of the hoopla that's happened in the last couple of days in the league, mainly starting with Chris Pronger.
Absolutely.
Chris Pronger took a high stick. No penalty called because with high sticking rules, it's if there's a follow through, it's not considered high sticking. But pretty much right to the eye, or right around the eye to the eye. Nobody's really saying. But another ugly injury thanks to the league's rules about visors.
Yeah, it was crazy. You could see him, or I should say hear him, screaming on the telecast. And like a lot of people said on Twitter, I mean, you see Chris Pronger screaming. It must be pretty serious.
Yeah.
It was really scary. I think a lot of us were worried he was going to lose vision in his eye and maybe have a career-ending injury. So to hear the Flyers say, like, you know, 2 to 3 weeks is just confounding, even for a tough guy like Pronger.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if it takes a little longer, but it's great to see that, his career isn't going to end. But, I don't know where you stand on visors personally. If I were to handle it, I would make them mandatory, but I would include a grandfather clause, so to speak.
Kind of like they did with helmets.
Exactly what they do with helmets. So, you know, if there's Craig McTavishes around that want to go around and risk their eyesight just because they don't want that little bar on the, you know, underneath their eyes, or, you know, they want to feel manly or whatever the reasoning being. I know that I've read a lot, you know, I don't really have a whole lot of personal hockey experience. I never really skated well enough to play,
mm-hmm.
Or at least in my opinion to play. But, I hear a lot of reasoning for not going with the visor, but man, those, and I know that, you know, they're not injuries that happen every day of the week, but they're awfully scary injuries and they end careers.
Absolutely.
Where do you stand on that? Are you
At this point, I think that the AHL is, you know, well, every minor league requires it now. Juniors requires it. Juniors, I think, even requires neck guards now. I can't remember if that's
I think
WHL.
They do.
It's going to happen. In my opinion, it's going to happen. And if it's not the NHL or the NHLPA or both that gets behind this first, it's going to be insurance companies. Because imagine what the insurance payout would have to be for Chris Pronger, for instance, in his big contract? Can you imagine if, let's say, Ovechkin didn't wear a visor and took a puck in the eye? But the complaint seems to be that people can't see with them, which is not true. It takes some time to getting used to. And if you were a NHL player and you wanted to protect your career, how about spending the off season learning how to play with a visor? It does change your eyesight, I'm sure. But at the same time, if you work on it in the off season, it's going to feel natural by the time the season starts.
And a lot of those guys, you know, the reason I like the grandfather clause idea is if those guys are complaining about that, guys that come into the NHL are almost certainly experienced with at least a visor, if not a full face cage.
Absolutely.
So, there would be a seamless change for them. And then the old holdouts could look, you know, whatever way they want. And that could cut down on a lot of the griping. And, like you said, the insurance angle. And if I was an owner, I'd probably I'd demand that my players would wear it. I mean, you have this huge commitment that you're making, you know, and most of these contracts are guaranteed, actually all of them in the NHL. So, you know, why would an owner want to let that happen, especially to, you look at Stamkos in the playoffs And people will say, yeah, you can still get a high stick, you can still get injured. But, you know, if he didn't have a visor on when that puck hit him in the face, who knows what could have happened? I mean, that's a, 21-year-old player that could have, you know, been seriously injured in a high-profile game if he didn't have a visor on.
A number one overall draft pick could have lost an eye. Absolutely.
Just like the guy that, you know, just like his general manager. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, and his general manager said, you know, of course, he didn't wear a visor for most of his career until right near the end when he took that puck to the face.
Yep.
And he encouraged his players, please put on a visor.
Yep.
And of course, NHL rules being what they are, the CBA being what it is, that's the best that they can do.
Yep.
But it's still absolutely, it's still very wise. There shouldn't be a big issue.
No.
One of the things I was thinking about was Danny Heatley, and also when Joe Sakic was playing, their visors, they had gigantic visors. They came down and almost to the tip of the nose.
Yeah.
At that point, those are two players that have a lot of skill. And Danny Heatley, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about him, but even him being what he is, he has a lot of skill. He can play with a visor. I don't see what the problem is.
Yeah, like all the high-end guys, especially the young ones now, maybe I'll amend that to the young guys. I mean, like you said, Ovechkin, Crosby, Malkin, I believe. Yeah, they all have visors, so you can't sit there and say like that it makes that much of a difference. Maybe there's guys that truly believe that their talents are borderline enough that they can't afford, but that just seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I don't think I would risk that kind of career change for something like that, especially considering how players feel when their careers are over. Would you want it to end like that?
No, God. Now, you look at Brian Berard. I mean, that was like borderline tragedy. That, you know, he was a top end pick. I don't think he was number one, but he was a high pick. You know, I think he won the Calder, or he was at least up there. He was a promising player, and then that happened. And, you know, the guy's crazy enough to give up all that insurance money, actually, to come back and barely play. But you got to hand it to him and play, like, with such impaired vision for a decent amount of time. But, he's got a lot of what-ifs to look at in his career.
Absolutely. And then, well, let me ask you about this, because one of the problems with visors has always been the stigma of not being a tough guy, and if you wear a visor, then you're not as manly, and you shouldn't be hitting people if you're wearing a visor, and all of that.
Are you getting fights?
Yeah, exactly. So at this point, then the conundrum becomes: okay, do you take off your helmet if you're going to get into a fight? And then after that, if you get into a fight and you get knocked down, and you don't have your helmet on, you hit your head on the ice. Yeah, it kind of starts to snowball some into some of the other issues.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know if I'd be that worried about it affecting fighting. You know, they'll find a way to beat each other up. It is interesting that I didn't really think about that way, though. But yeah, taking the helmet off during a fight is very scary because of the way they can land on the ice. So, you know, I mean,
at the same time, leaving your helmet on when you're fighting is almost like turning your back to the play to protect the puck and maybe try and draw a penalty. If I leave my helmet on and you start to swing as a punch, I'm going to try and duck my head so you punch my helmet, not my face. Yeah. Sure. So I bet a lot more fights would end a lot faster.
Yeah, I don't know. That is a slippery slope. But I think generally, like, people act like you can't really limit injuries, but you got to limit the common sense ones at least. And that just slaps you in the face how obvious it is. And yeah, I just hope it happens soon. I mean, if Pronger got hurt worse, I bet it would have forced it into the discussion at the league level a little sooner. But I guess it's going to take a pretty serious one again for that to happen. It's been a little while since, you know, someone really, I mean, Mike Matteau, I believe his name was. That was pretty scary.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, I think it was when he was with the Islanders, or I'm not sure exactly, but yeah, if you do like an image search, you can see him with a towel like bleeding out of his eye.
Oh,
it's nasty. And that's just scary. Those are scary injuries. I mean, yeah. And then
one of the things I always hear from people is what's it going to, it's the common thing. What's it going to take? Is it going to take somebody getting killed? And I never really agreed with that sentiment because it doesn't have to take somebody getting killed. It can take leadership. Look at what, like we already mentioned, Steve Yzerman. It's somewhat unpopular leadership, but it's somewhat unpopular leadership that's led to a lot of things, including the NHLPA, including goalie masks. It's somebody doing something unpopular and making a stand and staying with it rather than just waiting for the worst thing to happen.
Yeah. Well, you know what? What I've gathered from sort of informal sentiment is that Shanahan kind of backing off his suspensions a little bit. And to me, that means that there's still a lot of that feeling that people don't have the stomach to deal with criticism, you know, and that's worrisome. That's worrisome on the visor issue. Who's going to have the courage to say, no, you have to wear one, you know? And again, that's why I think the Godfather clause or whatever you want to call it would be a great way to get that in there. Cause then, you know, it's sort of like the rookie minimum in that with, you know, the CBA and hey, that, you know, that might be a good time for it to happen and during the next collective bargaining agreement. But, you know, like with the rookie minimum, the rookies didn't really exist, so to speak, in those discussions. I mean, aside from agents, but aside from that, you know, you could let them sort of suffer while everyone else can go on with their business. It could be a bullet point that's easy to agree upon. So I think hopefully maybe the next collective bargaining agreement, they'll talk about it. But
I like the idea of a Godfather clause. You mean grandfather clause, but I like Godfather clause. Like if you don't wear a helmet, we're going to put a horse's head in your bed.
Yeah.
And we'll scare you into it.
In your helmet, maybe.
a horse's head wearing a helmet and a visor in now your helmet. That will get you. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I don't know where the line exactly is, but I would think that within the next 5 years or so, the line is definitely going to be on the side of visors. I can't imagine that anybody's going to let it go. I can't imagine insurance companies will let it go. I can't imagine that the NHL would wait until that point to let it go. Maybe it's just going to take maybe even a change in leadership up above. Maybe it's going to take a different GMs and different commissioner even maybe. But obviously
like
that won't be for a while.
Be here for a long time though. Oh, so hopefully that's not the tipping point of that discussion.
Absolutely. Oh, well, I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're a few weeks into the season. Things are looking at the standings right now. It looks like we're kind of in bizarro world. some of the teams, I mean, there are some teams that are exactly where you'd expect them to be. And then there are some teams that certainly aren't where you'd expect them to be. Tops on my list of that, are the Leafs and Canadiens. Those two teams seem exactly the opposite of where they should be right now from, I guess from the past, but even looking at their players now, does that make sense? I mean, why is Montreal doing so poorly? And yet Toronto is on top of their division right now.
I feel like with Montreal, a lot of it's just, logic catching up with them. I mean, I felt like the last couple of years, they sort of walked a tight rope. As far as their team is concerned, I mean, I never really looked at them on paper as a super talented team. I thought that Carey Price made a huge difference last season, and they got by with a good defensive system and got the scoring when they could. And you look at their injuries, and it's brutal. I mean, they've lost a lot of guys, you know, some shorter term than others. I get the feeling that they really were planning on Andrei Markov being healthier than he has been because they let Hamrlik go and Wisniewski, obviously. So, you know, they're just a really thin team that got battered by injuries. And I'm surprised they're doing this poorly. But, you know, it might be the reality for Montreal. But, you know, again, they find a way to scrap into the playoffs each year, even with minimal talent. So, you know, I wouldn't panic and I wouldn't blame Jacques Martin because I think that he got a lot more out of those teams the last couple of years than then he should. And
well, now he seems just, to be on the hot seat quite a bit right now.
It does, yeah. I've seen quite a bit, including Pro Hockey Talk about. But I think, you know, the more and more I'd cover, you know, hockey on a more regular basis, the less I blame coaches. You know, it's usually the general manager or just a kind of a bad set of circumstances. And there's certainly situations where a coach should get fired, but I don't think Martin should get fired for. I mean, yeah, if it gets ridiculous, then maybe. But like, who's going to do anything better with that roster?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. I'm looking at their defensive core right now. Four unrestricted free agents at the end of next year, all of them mid-level pay, but Josh Georges, Hal Gill. I mean, Hal Gill's been pretty solid as far as a stay-at-home defenseman, tough guy.
He's a good playoff guy. It seems like he struggles in the regular season a bit.
I was kind of surprised. You know, when he was with the Penguins, I never expected him to do very well, and
me neither. No,
and then he did okay, I think, but he actually seems a little better with Montreal.
Yeah,
I think Subban is good, and he definitely has a role, and he's playing it. But Andrei Markov is your top defenseman. Okay, Svacek, you know, 35 plus contract there. Like I say, Josh Georges, I guess I never thought that. Hammerlick was all that big a deal, but I guess I'm wrong there. Maybe it's just his age.
He's a solid guy. You know, he's got a good mix of offensive and defensive talent. He's certainly not huge, but I can guarantee they're missing him right now. It's a thin roster that's getting battered by injuries. And I think Subban's actually having a little trouble just because they're asking too much of him now. Mm-hmm. His numbers, I haven't looked at him recently, but I think he was like a -6 in a very small amount of games. So he's just, he needs, you know, he's in his second season. He shouldn't be, you know, a bedrock defenseman. It's a lot like what happened with Tyler Myers in Buffalo last season. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was that bad. I think Buffalo expected him to replicate, you know, his rookie season. Well, you know, that's not always possible.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at his numbers on and he's playing 24, almost 25 minutes per game, which is like superstar defenseman type numbers. And he's got a -6 rating in 8 games. So, you know, their defense is just racked with injuries. And, you know, Carey Price was great last season. I was a little skeptical about him before, but he sold me pretty well last season. But it's like that offense isn't that great. Their defense is just in a bad spot, and Carey Price can't solve everything. So
no, he can't.
But that could be the reality for a while there in Montreal.
Well, you know, their top five forwards are locked in, all with no movement clause or no trade clauses at least. But yeah, you know, Scott Gomez again is not playing $7 million worth of hockey.
Oh, he's injured actually. But
jeez. I totally didn't realize that.
Like a week. It's like a week long injury.
Eric Cole, from what I've been reading, mostly he's been on the bench.
Yeah, he's not doing well. No. He needs Eric Staal.
He does. Thomas Mechanic's been playing great.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and thank goodness he's around for a long time. But other than that, and then you look across, you know, you look across at Toronto. And they're at the top of their division right now. And did they really make that many changes, or is it just so early that attrition hasn't settled in yet?
Well, you know, it might be carryover with Reimer. He actually got injured recently, and Gustafson lost to the Flyers last night. But he's been looking pretty legitimate, and obviously Phil Kessel's on fire.
Yeah.
I mean, he is. He made no mistake about it. He had like a little broken play last night, and he scored like, you know, just a reflex shot. It was impressive. I mean, I think he's gonna slow down just naturally. I mean, last I checked, he's connecting on like one out of every three shots he's been taking has been going, and that's not gonna keep up. But I mean, they don't even have Tim Connolly back yet. I guess Dan Phaneuf is getting it together. It's maybe a little bit. You know, they had a pretty good second line / 1B line with Grabowski, MacArthur and Kuhlman last year, and it seems like they're doing pretty well. So, you know, like they don't strike me as a great team, but, you know, I had them, I think, 9th or 10th in the East, and they were one of the toughest omissions for the playoffs for me, and they're showing why. I mean, they're, you know, they're enjoying a nice home ice advantage, but, you know, I don't know. I think they're going to slow down a bit, but a playoff bid is, in my opinion, perfectly reasonable. Mm-hmm. Although I did look at their even though they're 5-2-1, they have a -1 goal differential, at least according to ESPN. So maybe they're, you know, kind of getting a little lucky too. I'm looking at some of their numbers now, and there's some close games aside from two. Actually, they just lost badly to Boston and Philly. So they're winning close games right now, and, you know, their defense is still a little suspect, but if they have Reimer in there, I think they'll be able to do pretty well. He's starting to sell me. I was very, very skeptical about Reimer just because it was, I think he just played 25 games, but so far he's playing pretty well.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well, it's early in the season. You know, you're right. They are Toronto's -1 in the goal differential, and mm-hmm. you know, that's not bad. That's not awful. You can still, you can easily make the playoffs with that, you know, with that kind of goal differential. Now you get down to things like Winnipeg, Ottawa. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed that Ottawa is only -10, but
yeah, they have the same record as the Boston Bruins.
That is strange. That, you know, that Bruins. Let's talk about the Bruins a little bit. Why do you think this is all just Stanley Cup hangover at this point, or is there something else going on here? This is almost exactly the same team.
Yeah, that might be the problem, though. You know, I feel like they had cap space to get a little better, and I know, yeah, they had the cup, so you think you can't get better, but I mean, I think most people would agree that the Bruins, while good, weren't the best team in the NHL last season. Mm. And even if they just, you know, slightly tweaked their, you know, maybe their defense a little bit, because after Chara and Seidenberg, there's a pretty steep drop. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're getting a Seguin, or I always mess up his name still.
Seguin? Yeah.
He's got 9 points this season.
That's he's been a lot hotter than last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're getting production out of him, but it just seems like, you know, Krejci's really fallen off. Wow, yeah, he only has 1.5 games and a -5. And he was the playoff leader last season. So they need their top line to get back together. You know, and maybe inject a little bit of fear and new blood with a trade, you know? Just give those guys the sense that they can't be complacent. Because they did celebrate their cup win a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I think the cup hangover thing is more for the losing teams, because they get banged up, get so far, and then don't win. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time, especially if it's like a Cinderella team, you know, like look at the Edmonton Oilers. Talk about a cup hangover, losing Chris Pronger. I mean, that's brutal.
Yeah, well, somebody was talking about, like, look what happens to teams that lose Chris Pronger. As soon as Chris Pronger goes, they just tank. Chris, yeah. Same thing happened with the Ducks. As soon as Pronger left, boom, they fell right apart.
Yeah, no, they did. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't help that they eventually lost Scott Niedermayer, too. Mm-hmm. The Ducks are a weird team, though, because they got that trio of power forwards and Timo Solani. So they can usually stick with it. They weren't disastrous without Bronger, but no doubt about it. I mean, well, you know, since there was a possibility that his career would be over last night, did get me thinking a bit about his legacy. Actually, you know,
his dubious legacy.
Well, a couple of years ago, on my site, I was getting frustrated on Psycholactic Sedin's with a lot of the big blogs sort of covering big obvious stories, you know, and I'd do the same. So I decided I'd do my all decade team a year early, so no one could have done it, basically. And it basically came down to a top three defenseman of Pronger, Lidstrom, and Niedermayer. Mm-hmm. And the consensus obviously was Lidstrom first and then Niedermayer second. But I would argue that Pronger was at least the second best defenseman of that decade.
Mm-hmm. He and Niedermayer in their cup run, they were playing 30 or 32 minutes a night each.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. And that, of course, you know, that just rests up your other defensemen so much that they can go out and be studs when they're when their times come.
Especially if they split them up, it basically makes two other defensemen a lot better by, you know, osmosis with the two of them. But the funny thing about, like, when I was doing that, and I think it only got more stark, is that Pronger actually scored more points than Niedermeyer. Now, I know that, the you know, Niedermeyer played for the Devils, but still, I mean, you picture Pronger being more of like a just a mean, you know, awful human who hurts people a lot. But he scored a lot, too. And on some pretty mediocre teams, I mean, the Blues and the Oilers, you know, those aren't – it's not like he's sending a shot, you know, from the point and having it getting deflected in by Steve Yzerman and Sergei Fedorov and, you know.
Right. But do you think it's maybe the Chara effect where at some point you just hit it so darn hard, it's eventually got to go in, if even if it's got to go through someone?
Yeah, I mean, Pronger's slapper was pretty close to Chara's. And, you know, I don't think he'd feel bad if he hurt someone with a slap shot. Like, I heard Chara actually had, you know, felt human emotions such as guilt and remorse. And those never really occurred to Pronger that much.
Well, do you think that Pronger's just a – do you think that this is – how much of it's an act? I mean, they were talking about it during the Blackhawks-Flyers series, and that Pronger was – part of a lot of what Pronger was doing was deflecting attention away from – the other, his teammates, and by being that character that everybody loved to hate, that the media wanted to surround and say, hey, what's he going to say this time? He couldn't give his teammates a break from all of that in the hoopla and let them just play hockey.
Well, that's certainly true in the Chicago series. I mean, you know, the theatrics with the puck stealing, you know, that was, he was almost like clown-like in that series at times. But he, you know, he limited Taves especially. He didn't have a great series. That was the funny thing about that Conn Smythe thing, is that Kane was actually much better than the Cup Finals. And, you know, like, I've made the argument that Pronger should have been in the discussion at least for, like, three different Conn Smythes. I mean, that Ducks year, like, he didn't win it, and, yeah, like, he got suspended, so I understand why he didn't get it, but he was a huge difference maker then. Edmonton, I mean, he willed that team. Yeah, they almost won. God, I can't remember the random goalie after Dwayne Roloson got injured off the top of my head.
Conklin.
Well, Conklin allowed that goal, but then they went with someone else.
Oh, I so want to say Niemi, and it's not Niemi.
No, it's a real obscure guy. I'm going to look it up now.
It was like Markkanen or.
Yeah, you see Markkanen, I think.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, though. But, yeah, it's something like that. I mean, he was a schlub. And he almost won a cup. Oh, and I'd say Chris Pronger was – I mean, he even scored a penalty shot goal in that series. So, you know, I mean, if you put a gun to my head – and this is crazy. I know it's nuts. But if you put a gun to my head and said, okay, you need to win a game, you got any defenseman recently, like maybe from that decade – I might even take Pronger over Lidstrom. I know that sounds crazy, but, you know, they say fear is like a motivator, but it could also be a demotivator. Like, I don't want to go to the slot because Chris Pronger will hurt me. I don't want to go in the middle of the ice because Chris Pronger will hurt me. And even if Lidstrom, you know, there's no way you should discount how great he was. But I don't feel like you have that same – I mean, obviously you don't have that same fear. Like, literally, like – you have a fear of being embarrassed because he'll take the puck away from you with little effort, you know, or take your angle away. Any number of things that, you know, are, as we know with visors, players take being humiliated very seriously. But I think being worried about being maimed is still a much more direct fear. So, you know, I think history will look at Pronger a little more in a more reverent way than we do, because he's, you know, like you said, he deflects so much of that negative attention that you forget that great player. And he still might be. And that's the interesting thing about Philly, is that I think almost everyone that was prognosticating about the Flyers was assuming that Pronger was kind of on the decline. He might not be, though. I mean, once his eye gets better, of course.
Well, of course, yeah. No, it's I guess it just depends. I guess it depends on what you need. And that probably sounds a bit like a cop-out, but really, do you need, which kind of defenseman do you need? Do you need a Lidstrom, or do you need a, Do you need a Niedermeyer? Do you need a, there's all kinds of different styles out there.
Absolutely.
And Pronger just, he fits. I think he really fits with the Flyers. And
oh yeah.
Then you look at, weren't people complaining, you know, wasn't the anonymous random complaint that Pronger was kind of tough on other players in the locker room and then the question was, boy, isn't that kind of what they need after underachieving for so long?
Well, you know, you look at the Mike Richards situation, which I'm assuming that might be part of what you're talking about. Mm. You know, I wonder, that guy hated the media so much. Couldn't they have just demoted him, made Pronger the captain, or would that have been just too much of an indignity for him? I mean, I still think the Flyers shouldn't have traded him. Jeff Carter, that's fine with me, you know.
And Jeff Carter broke his ankle, is that right?
I'm not sure exactly. It's either an ankle injury or I don't know. It's something that'll keep him out for a little while.
Yeah. And boy, is there a team that could use as many bodies as possible right now?
No kidding.
But yeah, I guess, with, do you want to touch on Columbus? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
I was talking to, we're on the Avs Hockey podcast, which should be out about the same time as this episode, at www.avshockeypodcast.com. I just recorded this past weekend. It was talking about how when it came up with power forward, I said, hey, Columbus has Rick Nash. Now, there's a huge power forward. They just need 10 more of them.
No kidding. They need a lot more Rick Nash for a lot less money.
For as good of a player as Rick Nash is, boy, is he ever buried on a team that should be so much better than it is.
And it makes you wonder what he'd do on another team. Like, has he been in squalor so long that he'd explode in an awesome way? Or is he sort of getting his stats because, you know, I mean, he's not on a good team. That you don't have to worry as much about Rick Nash scoring his point per game if you're scoring two or three more points per game than, you know, the team you're facing. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder, it's sort of like the Florida Panthers argument, you know, with David Booth and before him, Olli Jokinen. Like, are these guys really that good, or are they, you know, getting the most out of a lot of opportunities?
Right.
I think Rick Nash is a very good player.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to gauge exactly how good he is because he's been on such a bad team for so long.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at the Olympics. He wasn't as big as a factor in the Olympics, I didn't think, as he could have been.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the best that we're going to get as far as a comparison for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's hard to judge. I mean, you know, there are a lot of good players that didn't play that great, even for Team Canada, you know, I mean, people, especially Capitals fans, would be quick to point out that that Sidney Crosby was kind of mediocre until that big goal.
Which was, I mean, it was a lucky goal. There was, you create your own luck and you capitalize on mistakes. I'm not trying to discount Sidney Crosby, even though, boy, I wish it could have been anybody other than Sidney Crosby to score that goal.
It was pretty hilarious that happened.
But yeah, you're right. It was easy to disappear on that team, on that Team Canada. It should have. And then I'm looking at the Columbus roster right now and looking at the forwards. Jeff Carter should be a little better than he's playing right now. RJ Umberger. What happened to RJ Umberger? Was it that big layout?
He still gets his like 20 goals or 25 goals a year. He's pretty steady.
I thought when he was brought in a couple of years ago, I thought, wow, this is a big pickup. I think this is a guy that could really make this team click a little better. And so far that hasn't been the case.
Well, I mean, I hate to bury down one player, but Steve Mason.
Yeah.
He just hasn't been playing well. And, I don't know if it's still running anymore, but, one of the stats blogs that kind of keeps it pretty simple. And I can understand it is, Brodeur is a fraud. Which is obviously a provocative name. But he pointed out that really, even in his rookie year, Mason only really had like a couple of good, maybe two or three good months. And then he sort of, either people figured him out or he went back down to earth. Mm. I'm looking at Umberger. The last three seasons, he has right around 25 goals a year. So he's actually, it's not his fault. He's been playing well. In fact, he's blossomed out of Philly, at least as far as goal scoring is concerned. He's sort of the same, like a little bit more points, but not a lot. But yeah, I mean, if you have to blame it on one guy, and it's not totally fair because that defense isn't very good,
No, but maybe it's, I mean, maybe it's time to give Curtis Sanford the start. Give him a few games. I mean, I know, but you know, Curtis Sanford, I remember seeing him in training camp for the Blues right before the lockout, and I loved his work ethic.
Yeah.
And his positioning was great. And now he's not as young as he used to be, and I wouldn't completely hang my future on him, but considering they got rid of Garand,
which they shouldn't have, by the way.
Yeah, and he seems to be doing just fine in Tampa. Thank you very much. Yeah. And they brought in Sanford. Obviously, they have faith in Mason, but I don't know who else does at this point.
I think it's more of like a desperate hope. Mm-hmm. You know, like they just really don't want to accept the fact that he might be Pascal Leclerc part two.
Oh man, and I don't even know if James Wisniewski coming back is going to be, it's going to help, but
it helps their power play. Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, is he going to help keep the puck out of the net?
Mm. No, that's not his strong point. Neither is Carter. That's the problem. Both of those guys made them a better scoring team on paper. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, they've allowed 29 goals in 8 games so far this season.
Man.
That's scary.
Yeah, they're one.
And that Ottawa loss was just brutal.
And considering what's happened with Ottawa when Ottawa lost 7-1 with the Avalanche, and then the only point that Columbus has gotten so far was in the shootout.
Yeah,
was losing the shootout to the Colorado Avalanche. It's not. Yeah, that's ugly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
they should have won that Ottawa game, Columbus.
They were up 3-2 and lost it basically in the last 34 seconds.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. Like, just, you couldn't have written a crueler story than that. That was brutal.
it's brutal, but you know what? I hate to say it. I mean, it's comical in a way, because where's the fix going to come from? Unless who's going to step up and fix this? They're talking about right now. There was an article on Puck Daddy about and I also saw it on Kukla's Corner. Mm-hmm. That the Blue Jackets GM is just saying that they're going to basically have to just step it up.
Yeah.
Which means essentially, I mean, no changes are coming, because what changes are there to make?
All they can do in my mind is shed salary. I mean, they've had some pretty bad issues. Like they're sort of the quiet team that's struggling with their arena and all that stuff. You know, like I've read some stuff. They've been apparently in trouble for a few years now, like 2 or 3 years. They've been in pretty serious trouble. And I'm looking at their roster right now. Vinny Prospel is tied for the most points on that team. You know, that's just, I don't have a problem with Prospel. He's a, a decent depth forward, but, he's playing out of his head and it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like, well, who could they move that would actually make their team better? I think the one thing they really need to do soon, whether it's this season or next, they need to accept the fact that Mason might not be the guy. He's got 2 years, including this season, left.
All right. I know this is going to sound weird to speak, to say out loud, but let's make the Vancouver Canucks fans happy, if that's even remotely possible. And let's trade Mason for Luongo. Get rid of Luongo and let Schneider take over, and then they'll be happy.
Have to give someone pretty good to get Luongo. I'd hope. You know, I don't think that Mike Gillis has the same opinion of Roberto Luongo as Canucks fans do.
No, I do want to I do want to talk about Luongo, but I did want to mention something that Scott Housen said, and I'm reading this from Kukla's Corner, where he posted part of the quote, what Housen posted on the Blue Jackets website. And Housen says, 90% of our season remains, and that is more than enough time to reach the goals we have set for ourselves. We are bent but not broken, and very determined to get back on track. And it's a good point. Where we're what we're looking at right now is that 10% of the season has happened, and that's it.
Yeah,
it's a long season. There's plenty of time to get back on track. The question is how you do it.
The problem is also that they're in a very competitive division. I don't think they might be too big of a hole to make the playoffs, considering how good the West is.
And considering how good the Central is, Nashville does not look like Nashville never looks like they're going to roll over.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago as ever, is very competitive. Detroit mm-hmm. is Detroit, obviously. And the only person, you know, people that they can really, you know, slap around at all is St. Louis, possibly.
And I think I actually like the Blues. I think that I picked them to make the playoffs this year, lower seed, obviously. But mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're probably a better version of Columbus, like, you know, a league average goalie. I mean, I like Halak, and league average, like, that doesn't really constitute an insult anymore, because there's just a, you know, when you look team by team, there's not a ton of teams that have just a real big problem in net, in my opinion, at least.
Unless you're a Canucks fan and you believe that Roberto Luongo is the biggest problem ever, yeah, which
Satan or
I don't get it. I understand. I love to poke fun of him when the Avalanche are playing him, when he sure. falls apart. When I was in, I saw a playoff game when the in Chicago against Vancouver, when the year that the year that Chicago won. And it was a game where they went up, where Vancouver went up 3-0, and then Luongo melted down. And
I remember that game.
Oh, it was ugly, but and hilarious at the same time. But mm-hmm. we're talking about a guy who essentially, and people want to say he was within one game of winning the Stanley Cup, but mm-hmm. I look at it as two, because he needed two to, you know, they were up 3-2. They lost 2 games. He could have won either one of those. You know, this isn't, you know, the Buffalo Sabres Cup run, and they, you know, they still had another game to go even after skating the crease.
Yeah. You know?
But he tends to sometimes get in his own head.
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, I think he's a little fragile, to be honest.
I look at him almost like J.S. Chiguer. When J.S. Chiguer was with the Ducks, mm-hmm. and he was having, you know, he was having some issues, but he was also having some personal life issues. And I'm not going to say, you know, these guys should be robots. That would be horrible. They're people, and it happens. You know, they have issues outside of hockey, and then they creep into their game, and that happens. But it happened a lot with Chiguer.
Yeah,
it happened. I think it happens with Luongo. Despite, you know, I don't know whatever his personal life is like, but he seems to melt himself down.
Well, I think the problem is that it might not be his personal life. It might be his personal relationship with Canucks fans. Mm. And I don't think there's that patience. You know, like, I don't think they should trade him. I mean, you know, it kind of depends on how much value. I mean, I guess if you're talking about my, like, actual beliefs, I don't think any goalie should get paid. Or maybe like a small handful should get paid, you know, like more than $3.5 million or something per year. Mm-hmm. Like the Stars with Kari Lehtinen, they're riding him so much. And yeah, go ahead, pay him a lot. But, you know, like the guys like Luongo that have good backups, you know, I think the Detroit model of not paying goalies that much is a smart team building model. So yeah, I mean, like, big picture, yeah, maybe trade Luongo. But I think the main reason in this case it might make sense to eventually move him, maybe not now, maybe not later, is just because of the toxic relationship with fans. Like, they're just going to bury him. And like, maybe that game 7 loss was it, you know? Like, I mean, he's got like a bajillion-year contract. And, you know, if every year is going to be as rough as the season started, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, maybe Columbus – you know, would be willing, you know, they'd have to send some serious salary the other way. But
see, it doesn't seem fair to me that that the fans get on him so fast when yep. he lets in one goal. As Absolutely. Soon as he lets in a goal, no goaltender goes 1,000. There's no such thing as a 1,000 batting 1,000 goaltender.
And look at Thomas Vokoun. I mean, he had a horrible first game in Washington, and mm-hmm. now he's got amazing stats. And every goalie has their tough times, but if you bury the guy, then you're just going to hurt your own team. Yeah, it's the same thing with, you know, like a Bronx cheer, or, you know, like cheering for a different quarterback, like chanting another quarterback's names. Like, you're hurting your own team. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And if you look at Luongo's numbers, he's been very good almost all the time.
Last season,
but
for
I do
me,
agree that he. He got rattled so much in the playoffs that maybe they should have given Corey Schneider a little extra look. Because, yeah, like, it seemed like he was broken in Boston. And then, like, it's almost like the Bruins, you know, hypnotized him into thinking that, you know, he was in Boston in game seven. Like, it had that same feel. He fell apart once again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if Canucks fans can let it go and just relax, which, you know,
yeah,
there's a certain incident that makes you think they can't.
Well, the whole I look at last year's playoffs when they pulled Luongo and they said, and people said, oh, that's the wrong thing to do. Then they didn't pull Luongo and they said it was the wrong thing to do. There's always second guessing, but it seems like until they win a cup, which they came damn close, hasn't happened yet, but they came damn close and they're not that far off, much like the Bruins. They're not that far off from the team that they were. But
all they lost was really Christian Ehrhoff.
Yeah.
Really.
And that was a lot of money going away, but
yeah, they couldn't afford him. I don't know if his cap hit was okay.
Yeah.
Too much commitment.
And look at what was the award that they won last year? That Luongo and Schneider won as best save percentage Tanks? Tandem.
Yeah.
And
goals against. Yeah.
And if it weren't for Tuukka Rask not getting the wins, he probably would have, it would have been Thomas and Rask for that.
And it's interesting how similar those two. And you know, you look at it, I think Luongo is actually playing pretty well in Boston right now. Mm-hmm. But you know, you look at the length of Luongo's contract. You just gotta have some kind of patience, and that's the problem. Is like, you know, in Vancouver, that was such a devastating loss, and you know, like, I don't know if they can relax and just give it some time.
Well, it was a devastating loss in Edmonton when they lost in seven games. It was a devastating loss in Calgary when they lost in seven games. But then you look at the Penguins. They came back. They won it. It was devastating to Ducks fans in 2003. And yet in 2007, the Ducks came back, you know, had the right team and they had the right tools and they won it.
And, you know, I see a little Marc-Andre Fleury in Roberto Luongo, or, you know, the other way around. Marc-Andre Fleury has an insane knack for allowing horrible goals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember much from that Capitals series, but it was like either three or four games where he, in the first 10 minutes, if not less, allowed just an unspeakable goal that was his fault.
Oh, absolutely.
But you know what? He had a good team around him. And he played well enough in game seven and, you know, some of those big games that he could win a cup. And it showed that, you know, like, he was actually much better, in my opinion, the year before. It's not going to be about Luongo. If as long as he can play a baseline level, and he didn't during the cup finals and a lot of those games in Chicago, like two of those games.
Mm-hmm.
But they can win with Luongo. I firmly believe that.
No, they.
It's just a matter of getting back.
They won all but one game with Luongo, essentially. I mean, they lost a few games in there. Luongo had some meltdowns here and there, but boy, that's a lot of, you know the tagline of this show, hockey talk, you know, hockey talk without the entitlement, and it feels like entitlement. It feels like hockey entitlement sometimes when I hear them talk about Luongo in that way.
Yeah,
even though I like watching Luongo melt down as a fan of a team that's in that division that isn't the Canucks.
And just because for some reason I heard someone make an A-Rod to Luongo comparison, I was like, yeah, that's pretty much fair. It's like, it's not like people are either praising Luongo too much or beating him up too much. Mm-hmm. There's not enough people who are where they should be, which is in between. Like, when I say maybe they should trade Luongo, it's more just because of the long-term salary commitment that they have and that they could add more depth. And, you know, if they love Corey Schneider, if they really think he's the guy, you know, they could get a lot of value for Luongo at this point.
Well, teams have survived, you know, without Luongo before. I mean, look at Florida. Oh, never mind. maybe the island. Never mind. No, it's weird. It's
before and after, but I get your point.
Yeah. And Schneider was a very good goalie in Boston with BU. Mm-hmm. It's a great program, and he's a solid and respectable goalie. He might become a starter someday. He might not become a starter in Vancouver.
Yeah,
but there is no real challenge to the throne right now because you're going to play your money.
Yeah,
that's the same way I've seen that. We've seen that over and over.
Sure. They kind of have to.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll, I just, I would like to see a more reasonable, balanced approach to how Luongo is treated. I know that people say he's overrated. I don't think he's overrated. I think he's rated pretty much right where he should be. He's not unbelievable. He will steal a game, and just like any goalie, he'll lose a game. But that's the way that the position is.
But his stats have been pretty good. You know, I look at the overall picture, and his stats were pretty good. You know, in his stay in Vancouver so far, he's had, you know, some years have been better than others, and certainly some games are better than others. But
and let's be honest, how much divisional play have they seen so far? Not much. Once considering how bad Calgary is doing right now, Minnesota is actually playing better than they should be on paper. Avalanche only have two losses, but they're at home, you know, so there's a little diciness and questionability there. And then Edmonton is Edmonton, and nobody's expecting Hobby Bullen to keep going the way he is.
That's a very under the radar story. It's like someone hypnotized him into thinking it's a contract year. He's always good in the contract year, and almost always awful not. And then here's that he wasn't.
Well, you have something to prove if you're in a contract year. I think he's got something to prove. Considering his how his off season was. Considering
that last off seasons.
He had to spend some time in jail. I would have something to prove to the fans at that point.
For sure. And, you know, I'm looking at Vancouver's schedule, and it could get ugly in November. They have, let's see, 1, 2, 3. They've got 6 road games in a row to start November. And actually, they've got 3 more in that month. So if Luongo has a couple more bad games, it could get ugly.
Everybody seems to have those long stretches these days. The Avalanche had 5 in a row after opening night.
Yeah, the Rangers had a tough start of the season as well. First 7 games on the road, including games in Sweden. So
those are, you know, those when that first started with the whole starting overseas, I didn't know. I was not sold, but it's worked out. It's great. I have no problems.
I think you have to be smart about which teams you choose. Mm-hmm. You know, you do want that local tie if you can.
Yeah, but that's, you know, rotating rosters. Sure. You never know who's going to be where. So
yeah, absolutely.
Except, you know, who knows? I mean, even Solani didn't know if Solani was going to make it until
that was a nice boost, though.
Yeah, Solani. He's still. It's amazing how well he's playing.
He was amazing last year.
So frustrating sometimes because you expect him to just fall apart. Or, you know, when he was an Avalanche, and we were like, he's not really doing it, and then. Now he's doing it.
That lockout year really did him well. It's like
that knee surgery.
Found the fountain of youth in that time or something.
Anybody who listens to the rink has heard me say over and over and over, there's no one there's no individual that the lockout benefited more than him. There's no team that the lockout benefited more than Carolina because they stuck everybody in the AHL. Nobody seemed to go overseas.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah. I saw a lot of people that year in Lowell with the little lock monsters, their AHL team, Cole, Stahl, Commodore. It's the list goes on. It was a lot of the team that wound up winning the cup.
Interesting stuff.
Anybody else?
I get a little annoyed when people bash that Carolina team too much. I mean, they weren't great, but they had a lot of offense, and in that year that made sense because they were calling penalties. Probably, you know, maybe as they should, or maybe a little too much. Depends on how you look at it.
As long as they did it evenly, I think that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
If this guy does this and that guy does that, and it's the same thing and it's the same penalty called, then it's even.
Even if it's in the third period, that's a dream world. And, you know, they don't. Because they do. Like, there was a study a couple of years ago, and it was pretty clear that first and second period got a lot more penalties called than in the third, which is obvious, but it was confirmed in stats. So it's like, all right. It'd be nice to see it. You know, a penalty is a penalty no matter what time. It was interesting this playoff season that they actually called some penalties in overtime in the playoffs, though. That was pretty cool.
You definitely see the whistle put away. No referee wants to be the factor. But at the same time, if I hook a guy down, then I've made the choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I there's that whole question of like, oh, let the guys play. And well, what does that mean when a fan says that? Does that mean, you know, let him hack the ankle, let him, let him haul you down? And I don't know, at least we've seen more of the battles in front of the net are allowed to happen a little more. You see a little more of those cross checks, a little more of those that shoving and
before
until it gets really ugly and then they start to pull. They'll maybe send both guys, but
I can see that circumstantial stuff. And in front of the net, you know, you should be allowed to defend your goalie. Mm-hmm. So I hear you there.
Capitals and Penguins. I hate to, I mean, these are two teams that essentially the league has been building themselves on for several years. And, I like talking about teams that go a little under the radar and teams that, you know, I don't know as much about. I want to ask you about Dallas, but, you know, the Capitals and Penguins, I mean, Capitals are undefeated.
Yep.
As of right now, as we're recording this, they're 7-0-0.
And they're killing good teams.
It's amazing. And I didn't expect it from Vokoun, because even though Vokoun, I think, is a good goalie, he seems like a good positional goalie. Mm-hmm. And then you look at goalies like Tim Thomas or Roberto Luongo or at times Semyon Varlamov. One of the saves that he made the other day was just against the Blackhawks was just fantastic. But those guys are also reactional goalies. Mm-hmm. And Vokoun never seemed like a big reactionary goalie. He seems like a positional goalie, which
pretty much so.
Yeah. And now that there's less obstruction, of course, and teams are figuring out and blah, 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 ever since the lockout, that seems like less of a factor than positioning is important. But at the same time, you have to be able to react to the cross ice pass, the craziness in front of the crease, all of that kind of thing. So is he really being as big a factor as their record states?
Well, I mean, you look at his numbers and they're phenomenal. And, I think it's a good fit, you know, the Washington defense is better than it was. I like Alzner and Carlson as a shutdown pair, so to speak. Obviously, I've already said I like Hamrelick. I think Green is in the Luongo category. It's like some people are too nice on him. Some people are too harsh. Ultimately, if you put him in a position to succeed, he can be very useful. I mean, look at his 2 goals and 2 assists against the Red Wings on Saturday. As long as he's not your shutdown defenseman, I think he can be a very effective player. Weidman, kind of the same way. So they've got a strong defense. And yeah, I think Luongo is a difference maker. I think he's a top 5 goalie in the NHL, but we'll find out as the season goes on, and more importantly, as the playoffs go on. Mm. I think he's a huge upgrade over everything they've had in the net since Kolzig was, you know, in Godzilla mode. So
yeah,
I think he is a big difference maker. Now that, you know, they might hit a bit of a snag because they have a lot of road games coming up, but and they were a little more at home lately. But man, they were impressive. I mean, they beat Philly and Detroit combined 12-3 in the last 2 games. I mean, they blew out the Red Wings like they were a joke.
Yeah. Which I never.
The game was over by the middle of the second or third period, depending on how you look at it. So that's
which is surprising for the Red Wings, but at the same time, didn't they have like back-to-back games?
Yeah, it could be some of that, and you know, I mean, they could be a tough matchup for Detroit.
Mm-hmm. This is you're right, though. It is a hugely improved defense that when Tom Pody is your number one defenseman, you have questions. I haven't been watching that. I haven't been able to see them as much. How is Ovechkin still playing as much, I guess, defense as he was last season? Because I can never decide whether or not it's a good thing to start making him play more of a defensive role, or if that's just or if you should just let him be himself and keep him with guys who will play a more defensive role.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen a ton of them. You know, like in that regard, it seems like every time I've watched him, it hasn't mattered because they've just blown people out. You know, I was kind of in your boat too, as far as, you know, especially last season, it seemed like they weren't dancing with the girl that got them there. You know, like they were overreacting to public sentiment that they should change. Mm-hmm. And I think that people who say, like, you know, you should just play clogging defense, that's great if you have the Prongers, the Lidstroms, the A-list guys, but Washington didn't have that. They didn't have a great goalie. So they were basically trying to dance to someone else's song last season, and I really, really disagreed with that. This time around, they are a little better equipped to play a traditional style, though. Even the forwards they added, I mean, Troy Brouwer, you know, he's not a great player, but he's a nice fit with Chicago because he could complement and protect their top players when he was on the top line, which wasn't always, but he got a good amount of runs. You know, he's had a 20-plus goal season, and he could fit right in sort of the same role with Washington. And I think they overpaid Joel Ward, but he's still, you know, like another one of those guys that can help you win those ugly games, score ugly goals. So they have got Ward, Brouwer, Mike Knubel. They've got guys, and Brooks Like as well, you know, just to name a few. They've got guys that can score those ugly goals now. So I think they are more equipped to play a style that still kind of bums me out, though, because I kind of like seeing teams be different and play to their actual strengths instead of just trying to please the masses, so to speak. And it's a bummer, but it might work. And, you know, they have the goalie, in my opinion, now that it can make it work. I picked them to win the Cup this year, so I'm pretty big on Washington.
I think one of the most telling parts about that 7-1 Caps win over the Red Wings was that Ovechkin got 2 assists and no goals. That's interesting. That's not what you would expect from.
Yeah, he's always gotten like in the 40 range, I think. Mm-hmm. So he's not an awful playmaker. He's just and that was probably the most promising sign for Washington because they were winning while Ovechkin wasn't really playing that well. Mm-hmm. You know, and part of it, I think Detroit's defense has been a problem a little bit lately.
Yeah. Well, they're not getting younger.
Yeah. Although I guess they got a little younger this summer with Ian White and Commodore instead of Rafalski retiring. So
yeah, I wonder. I haven't really paid much attention to Commodore and how he's doing. Is he even playing?
Me neither. Yeah, I don't know. I think he's a good bottom pairing guy.
Looks like he was a scratch for that game, for that 7-1 game.
Well, there you go. I guess he's doing even worse than I expected.
I mean, Cronwall's Cronwall.
Yeah.
Erickson, not, you know, he's fine.
Yeah, he's okay, I guess. Yeah,
Lidstrom's always going to be Lidstrom. Mm. So, I mean, I guess.
I picked Chicago to win the division, but Detroit's playing a little better than I expected. Mm.
So that covers the Caps. What about the Penguins? I mean, all I ever hear about the Penguins these days is they don't have Crosby, they have Malkin, and still they're winning.
Yeah.
You know,
they confounded me last season. I felt like in the second half, you could commend them for being scrappy, but they were winning a lot of those games in overtime or in shootouts or just getting a lot of charity points. And I was actually surprised they even pushed Tampa Bay to 7 games. I mean, you know, I know they went up 3-1, but it seemed like a lot of bounces were going their way. And I felt like maybe that was going to slow down the season, but you know, one big part is James Neal has been outstanding.
Eight goals, one assist.
Yeah, he's been what they thought they were going to get when they traded for him last season. And he was kind of just a mess. It seemed like maybe he was guarding an injury or just he slumping. But like he was Stars fans were turning on him from what I gathered while he was And there was a while there where he seemed like one of the power forwards of the future. Been outstanding in Pittsburgh. And I don't know if I don't think he'll keep it up to the same degree, but it's like he's taking a ton of shots. He's just being really assertive. He might be the winger they've been looking for years, or at least one of the wingers, so to speak. So he's been a big difference maker. Letang's sort of looking like Letang was in the first half of last season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're getting it done. I got it. You know, like, I think it's a little misleading because they played 10 games. So, you know, no other team has even played. Let's see. No other team has even played 9 yet. So, you know, they're right there with Washington, but they played 3 more games. But they're still right in the hunt for the Atlantic. And that's surprising. I mean, a lot of people have poked some holes in Malkin's game, and I kind of agree that he's sort of one-dimensional. Like he kind of gets protected by Crosby a lot when they're both healthy, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing fine without both of them. You know, they're getting it done. I don't know if it's going to last, but, you know, that I think they'll be in the mix once those guys get back. Yeah. You know, Malkin, they got to be careful with him, you know, him too. It's not just, you know, he's got a knee problem. That was like the old school scary injury, you know, before concussions came in. So
Matt Cook is actually playing like a hockey player.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he's changed. I don't know. I feel like it inevitably he's going to hit someone because that's just his game. But he's always been a guy that could play two-way hockey. I think some people go a little overboard, sort of like they do with Sean Avery.
Mm.
You know, like, oh, he's a pest, but he can really play. It's like, yeah, he's pretty good. It's not like, let's not get too out of, he's not an all-star, all right? You know?
So. No, neither one of them are, but they can play. And that's the most frustrating part is when you watch them. And why are you pulling that crap when you can be doing that?
I feel like they think they're supposed to, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's the role that got them there.
So. Marc-Andre Fleury, you already talked about, but that guy really did grow up a lot over those, after losing the cup. I felt like he really matured a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, he even last season, he grew up a little bit. I mean, most people forget that he had a horrible start to the season and people were even talking about, what's his last name? I always get, for some reason, because they're like solid career backups, I get Brian Boucher and Brent Johnson mixed up sometimes.
Brent Johnson, yeah.
But yeah, people were talking about Brent Johnson, you know, like taking a lot of his time the first chunk of the year. And then Fleury, again, going back to the patience, you know, motto.
Yeah.
Fleury figured it out and he was great the rest of the year. He even got to the All-Star game, which I think he probably shouldn't have, but still.
Well, Johnson did also take care of.
I'm looking at their stats now. They're both like at 92.5% save percent. And that's great. Mm-hmm. That's what you're hoping for in a goalie. So, you know, the Penguins are getting good goaltending and they're scoring. And yeah, it seems like, I've always been a little skeptical about Fleury. You know, some of the optics are bad with those ugly goals he allows sometimes, but
yeah. Well, Johnson has always been he's a career backup, mm-hmm. but he's not bad. He's not great. And
no.
He's played everywhere. It seems like.
Yeah. Him and Brian Boucher have, you know, like, I think that's one thing for Carolina that they actually have someone who can give Cam Ward a break every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't realize that Cam Ward a crazy amount.
I didn't realize that he played for St. Louis for as many years as he did. 5 years.
Huh.
I guess 4.5 because he was traded to Phoenix.
Oh yeah.
They played four in Washington. I thought he moved around a lot more than that.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was thinking they maybe had a year in Buffalo, but I guess not. I know Conklin. Conklin, of course, spent time in Buffalo, but. Yeah, that's and drafted by the Colorado Avalanche. He never played for them.
Nice.
Not once in fifth round. Yeah, he's probably one of the most successful goalies not named Waugh.
Yeah,
around the league as far as it was ever drafted by Thomas, but you know, of course Thomas was drafted by the Nordiques and Colorado Avalanche doesn't really like to acknowledge that.
Ninth round, does that even count?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you even celebrate if you get drafted in the ninth round? I don't know.
Yo, there was a great story about LA Kings. Why can't I think of his name? His name is escaping me.
You have to give me a hint.
He was their big stud for many years.
Ziggy Palfy?
No. No, he's still working with he's pretty much like the fan.
Luke Robitaille?
Thank you, Luke Robitaille. Why? I've just lost all credibility that I didn't have in the first place. Just totally. I'll do that. I'll do that with my family. I'll be like, yeah. Linda, that's right. That's my
Steve,
sister.
Steve, that's not your name.
But Luke Robitaille, when he was drafted so late. They didn't have a jersey for him. They didn't have a t-shirt for him. They didn't have a hat for him or anything. They basically just pulled his name out of a hat And
well, I mean, you know, Martin St. Louis didn't even get drafted.
That's true.
Hart Trophy winner. And that's, that shows some cowardice. I don't think that people didn't know about him. I think that they were like, he's too short. They didn't learn from Theo Fleury. But I can't read GM's mind. So no.
Well, that, at that point, you know, you're just picking names out of a hat. But
yeah,
with, why not he was 171st overall, Luke Robitaille. And he when they finally came up to the table, somebody at the table just had a lapel pin and said, "Here you go, kid."
That's brutal.
And that's all. That was all he had. And look at him. You know, he's just Hall of Famer.
Yeah, maybe that was part of what motivated him, though. You never know. That might have helped in a weird way.
Yeah,
not in an immediate way. You know, especially to Thomas. I mean, he didn't become a regular NHLer until he was 30 or 31. So mm-hmm.
That's true, man. And look at his story. I mean, it's just those. It's unfortunate because you never know when those stories are going to crop up, and those stories have to start somewhere with failure because you don't know. They're out there, but it's almost like those guys who recover, like Foster from Minnesota. It's a great story, but the only reason it's a great story is because of the tragedy.
Something terrible happened.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I think it was Taylor Faden.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully he'll have a good story at the
end. Haven't heard anything about that since the broken femur.
Probably not much to report because it's a pretty severe injury, so it probably takes a long time for even a slight amount of progress to happen.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there are plenty of rods in him, in his leg right now. I have a couple of plates in my wrist, and I went and played some hockey yesterday, and boy, I can tell you that it after a while, it hurts.
Yeah.
And I'm not nearly at his physical condition, but I'm not nearly pulling off the shots that he is either.
Yeah. So. Foster can shoot, man. That guy's a crazy slap shot.
I kind of want to finish up on the Dallas Stars right now
because sure.
they're first in the conference mm-hmm. for some reason. I can't figure out. I can't figure out exactly why. And I know that you're down there. You see mm-hmm. them. Cary Lehtinen, and I don't get it. Help me out here.
Well, as far as Cary Lehtinen is concerned, I mean, I feel like he's always showed flashes of brilliance, even in Atlanta. I mean, he was a high pick. I think he was number two of his draft.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was he always got injured. And he, you know, he was on a bad team, a team that didn't even have much of a direction.
Mm-hmm.
I've been shocked that he's been able to carry such a workload in Dallas. I mean, some people would say Brad Richards was their MVP last year. I'd say you'd have to at least say Lennon was co-MVP last season. That being said, and he's been amazing this year. People forget last season they started off really hot too, and they were actually in the top of the Pacific for quite some time. The problem is, just like last year, they're really top heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Nieuwendyk made some good subtle moves, like spending very little for Sheldon Soure. For all his flaws, I mean, at his like $1.6 million, he's a good deal at that price. But no, I don't think they're going to win the Pacific, and maybe they can be a lower seed, but they're not going to, I don't think they're going to stay where they are right now. I like Louis Erickson. Jamie Benn is a beast or whatever kind of adjective you want to use to describe a good player.
You don't want to go with the Pierre Maguire monster.
Yeah. Maybe he's a monster. He could be.
Is he a monster or a beast? Let's throw this.
I think beast. Let's go with beast. Cause then Jamie Benn beast, it kind of flows a little better.
There was that great goal they scored. I believe it was against Columbus, wasn't it? They basically beat four players and the goalie.
It seems like that's like half of his goals. Like he's a highlight reel machine. And actually it's surprising. Last I checked, he had more assists than goals. I was like, what? I guess that's what playing with Erickson. There's a lot to like with Dallas. I like their new coach. It seems like, I mean, I guess it's kind of easy to look good after Mark Crawford.
Mm.
But, you know, that division's too good for them to, I think San Jose is too deep and LA is too deep for Dallas to stick around and beat those two. But I think that it's reasonable for them to hope for a playoff spot. especially once they get their ownership stuff straightened out. Maybe they can do like a deadline deal or something to get a little more depth. I don't think they're going to keep it up, though.
Yeah.
Like in last season, kind of the same thing. They started hot, but they're just thin. They're really thin at, you know, their defense. I still, you know, they're letting up a lot of shots, and their coach said that was sort of part of the plan. I don't know if you really want to plan on a lot of shots, you know, even if it's better than high quality scoring chances. I'm not sure if that's what you really want to do with your defense, but you know, it seems like it's working. I mean, they're getting off to quick leads, which is something you can't sustain. There's a lot of things that point to them being sort of a hot starting team that won't be able to keep it up, but they've got some talent. I believe in Kari Lehtinen's ability.
Yeah.
I don't think he's actually, he's won every game he started, and Ray Kroft has lost two. Of course, Ray Kroft, one of his losses was a 1-0 game, which is just, that's harsh.
That guy is totally snake bitten. He's
actually gotten a little better. It's like I made fun of the Stars when they signed him a couple years ago, but he's been okay, you know?
Of course, you know, look at every other team he's played for. It just hasn't gone well. Even after he won Rookie of the Year, then he fell right apart. He's got Jose Theodore disease, I guess, but.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's the first name I would use to describe his career path. It seems like they both have a weird mixture of bad luck and a lot of chances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Theodore's got like 9 lives as a goalie.
I don't know how he keeps jobs. He's the master of the 2-year contract.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Who would have thought he would have gotten 2 years, even with Florida?
Yeah. I didn't think he was going to get two years out of Washington. I didn't see that happening, and he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing with Washington is, like, I like Varlamov, and I feel like they didn't, like, he didn't really get a full swing in Washington because of injuries and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Michael Neuber, or however you pronounce it properly, I think he's a good 1B, maybe. I mean, he might get better. But like I look at his numbers and they're kind of average, and I think he's average. I think he's got a good mentality if he ends up being the guy in Washington, because like everything I've read about him is he's like cool as a cucumber.
Mm-hmm.
But Vokoun is a huge upgrade, and that's why I think they're going to be good. But you know, with Dallas, I like Kari Lehtinen a lot, but I think that they're leaning too much on those kind of guys, and in those tough months, you know, like middle of the year, dog days of the year, I think they're going to struggle a bit. I don't think that they have like, you know, I know the Sharks have gotten off to a slow start in a way.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that Niemi was injured. And I mean, I could also make an excuse with Havlat, but let's face it, he's going to get injured a lot. That's just what he does. But yeah, you look at the start of their season, Grice is like 1-2, and now that they got Niemi, they're on a 2-game winning streak, and I think the Sharks are built for the regular season, and that's not meant to be like a derisive thing. I think that they've gotten way too much criticism. I think, you know, sometimes you just lose. Like sometimes you're not as good as Chicago or Vancouver. You know, I think in those cases they just weren't as good as those teams.
Yeah,
there have been times when they've been disappointing, but I think that a lot of it's like it's hard to win the Stanley Cup, and you can't blame them for being in the hunt each year. I actually think the Kings are a little better for the playoffs this year, but
yeah, the Kings are going to be fun to watch. I'm actually going to a Kings game on Sunday.
Awesome. Awesome.
That's going to be fun as long as the Avalanche can try and win at home.
Yeah. That could be a very interesting game to watch. Yeah. It seems like, you know, in the playoffs, the Kings got sucked into the Sharks game, which made for some really exciting hockey, you know? Because I expected them to try to drag it down because they didn't have Kopitar. But instead, it was like it was a shootout. And, you know, obviously that 4-0 lead, they probably should have packed it in a little bit. Or maybe they shouldn't have packed it in. I don't know. You probably ask a Kings fan for a little more specific. Oh, maybe you don't want to touch that. That might be kind of a sore spot.
Yeah, except they have some... Yeah, they actually have potential, and that's something that they didn't have for so long. And you know, now at least they you know, I think they improved with just getting rid of Ryan Smith.
Yeah, and I mean, Richards is a fantastic fit.
Mm-hmm.
They got the right Richards, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think that the Kings dodged two major bullets by not getting Kovalchuk and not getting Brad Richards.
Yeah, they could actually team build. And
yeah, most of the time adding free agents, unless it's just like sort of tweaks, like smaller things, doesn't work out. You look at the history of free agency, especially after the lockout,
mm-hmm.
most of those big moves just don't work.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you got a guy that's just will fit anywhere, it almost never works out because it's just there's so many factors, you know, chemistry, luck, age, mm-hmm. injuries. I mean, you know, it just the Rangers, I mean, the Rangers were such an obvious choice for Richards and kind of a sad one. But the Kings, you know, they need to keep their young guys. You build winners through the draft. That's just the way it goes. Yeah, you can get some nice pieces, but it's the draft. I mean, you look at the Penguins, you look at the Capitals, you look at the Blackhawks. Pretty much everyone but the Red Wings. And even them, I mean, they just took longer with the, you know, they sort of marinate while other teams microwave, so to speak.
I like that.
So...
I really like that. That's funny. That's
well, yeah, the Kings need to stick with that. And they've got some gems in their system. I mean, they got some good defensemen coming up. You know, maybe tweak a few forwards here and there, but I love the Richards ad. So you should have a fun. They might be boring sometimes because they could play shutdown defense if they want to, but they've got, man, they got so much talent. It's just hopefully Doughty will be ready for your game. I'm not totally sure. He's still banged up.
Well, considering how much they spent on him.
Yeah.
And then can you imagine if they had also had to spend on either Kovalchuk or Richards?
Exactly.
Where would they be? Where would their money be?
And you know, they're still, I don't know how good their, you know, their ticket sales are. I haven't really had a chance to look at it, but I feel like they're still probably building a bit of a following, and they probably will benefit from the NBA lockout more than almost any team. But
if there is, I'm not convinced yet that there is much to build on from the NBA lockout. I just
not much. No,
I don't. I just don't see it. It's not like NBA fans don't know that hockey is there. It interferes with their sport as much as basketball interferes with ours. I'm just not convinced that they're going to start. They're going to go, oh, well, you know, there's no basketball. Let's go do that. I just don't see it.
I think for the most part, they'll fill that time with video games or drinking or.
Like I did during the lockout. I didn't go to any basketball games.
I can barely even remember that anymore.
I was lucky enough to be in Boston during most of the lockout. And so when there wasn't NHL games to go to, I went to other hockey games. There was so much college and juniors and minors and everything around that I wound up, it was great for me. I saw so many more smaller teams that I never would have seen before.
That's a good point. Yeah. You know, cause I was thinking, man, I'd be a mess if the lockout happened next season, but
you'd be great. You're in Texas. There's so
Texas
many
has a million minor league teams
right around you.
Austin
how many
Stars
are there?
Game, so.
Yeah. There's the Texas Stars are not that far away. There's Texas Brahmas.
I guess that's their technical name.
Yeah. Texas Brahmas right next to you. Same with the Allen Americans of the Central Hockey League. I mean, there's, you're lousy for it. You have the most, you
yeah,
have some of the
I
most professional teams in the U.S. for one state.
So maybe a lockout wouldn't be all bad.
Well, it wouldn't be good, but it wouldn't.
I'll be terrible.
You'd still be suffering, but still, at least there's something out there. I just don't see that a lot of NBA fans are going to start flocking. So
I think there might be a slight percentage just because it's sort of like the same time slot. I mean, I couldn't watch the NBA playoffs because of the NHL one this year. So that's for sports fans that are sort of like crazy sports fans, I could see it. Even just a small percentage taking a little taste and liking it could happen. It could have, but yeah, if you're banking on it being a huge deal, it's certainly not. I was going to make a point and I totally forgot.
It's all good. Well, I think we've exhausted the league.
Yeah.
Maybe even ourselves a little bit.
It's dehydrated now. Needs to.
James O'Brien, of course, writes for NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and starting up more writing for Roto World.
Yep.
I can always find you on Twitter at Cycle Like Sedin's. not cycled like the Sedin, cycle like Sedin's, even though his former blog, and who knows, you never know, it may see activity one day again, is cycle like the Sedin's. I'll try and find you. Send me a link to that All Decade Team post so I can put it up on the.
I'll have to track that down. That's a lot of fun.
That'd be great. Cool. Thanks a lot, James.
Well, thanks. Thanks a bunch.
That does it for episode number 68 of The Rink. 68, we didn't even talk about Yamir Yager. Maybe next time. The Rink can always be found at www.rinkpodcast.com, where there's links that make it easy to subscribe in iTunes, or you can leave a comment, or you see some of the links that we talked about, things we talked about on this show. You can call into The Rink at 845-704-RINK. It's 845-704-7465. And on Twitter, it's at Rink Podcast, all one word. I also do a show called the Avs Hockey Podcast with my man Jay Veen. It was recorded this past weekend. Check it out if you want to hear about the Colorado Avalanche. That's at www.avshockeypodcast.com. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.